You know, my favorite piece of wisdom I ever got was from my mom. And she used to say to me all the time, it's what's inside that counts. And it was, of course, referring to people, right? It's below the surface that really matters. And I would say the same thing. It's what's inside that counts. It's our job to figure out what's inside of the clients that we're working with.
Welcome, my friend, to the Conversations for Financial Professionals podcast. I'm your host, Dominique Henderson. And as a veteran of the financial services industry, I was curious to find out why, despite all the good that financial professionals do, that yet the term financial advisor would clear the room so fast at a dinner party. Why was this? And what was this gap between consumers of financial services and the providers of those services? In this podcast, I seek to close this gap by having forward-moving conversations to advance the profession of giving financial advice and provide tools to the next generation of financial professionals to serve their clients at the highest level. You see, as providers of financial services, we have the awesome privilege of partnering with consumers to help change family trees, normalize the creation of wealth, and help the industry as a whole do less harm and more good. So it's time to sit back and enjoy the conversation. As you know, the theme for season 6 is the talent pipeline in financial services. And today's conversation is with none other than Michelle Arpin-Bagina. We have so much fun in here. First, talking about money stories. Everyone loves stories. I know that I do. And we want to break down in this conversation why there's so much discomfort in the current social construct with people talking about their money stories. And for the aspiring and existing financial professionals listening, we talk about techniques that can be used to help people deal more comfortably with their money stories. Then we move to the power of the breakthrough with how the dynamic of the client-advisor relationship changes when the money story is shared. And finally, we tackle how you cannot give away what you don't have in Michelle's advice for financial professionals embracing their own money stories before working with clients. This was one for the ages. Make sure you get your pen and your paper out to take notes. It's time to sit back and enjoy the conversation. Welcome to another episode of Conversations for Financial Professionals, where we are helping the next generation of financial advisors and financial professionals do the work that they love. And today, I am very, very, very happy. I have a very special guest, Michelle Arpin-Bagina. We are going to chop it up and have a really, really good time. I just want to read the bio as is. If you still think of wealth as purely a numbers game, you haven't met Michelle Arpin-Bagina. An advisor, author, and speaker, Michelle has taken her own money story and alchemized it into a passion for financial literacy that marries the science of wealth management with the art of financial therapy. Michelle grew up airplane, sports car, and yacht poor, like most of us, regular people, surrounded by the outward signs of wealth, but plagued by the insecurity of knowing it was a sham, and her family was never more than a bounce check away from disaster. It turned out to be the perfect starting point for a career dedicated to revolutionizing the way we relate to money. Yes, it's a relationship. I totally get that. And the way financial advisors work with their clients. Often called the Aaron Brockovich of financial literacy, Michelle challenges us to ditch the notion that it only lives on Wall Street and find where it truly resides, at the intersection of knowledge, skills, and emotional composure. Welcome to the podcast, Michelle.
Thank you, Dominic. It's so great to be here. I love what you're up to on this podcast.
Well, thank you. Thank you. I'm really looking forward to getting into this topic of debunking money secrets, because I think there's a lot that can be said for, well, there's two things. There's a lot that can be said for the old guard passing off to the new guard and those lessons learned so that they become more effective in their client relationships. And then also just, you know, I think the new guard understanding that, and we read this in the bio, that it is a relationship. It's not just this, you know, weird, intangible thing out there that, you know, that no one knows about. We can actually put, you know, a finger on it and say, hey, this is what we're trying to move towards. So I'm really, really curious. Let's start with a story. My audience may not be familiar with you. And just kind of tell us a little bit about Michelle and what you're up to right now.
Sure. Thanks for asking. We're going to really start off going right for the jugular there. Thanks. So I do have a story to tell, and it took me, I actually vowed I would never tell the story. It took me years and years to be able to. The truth is, growing up, it appeared like my family had it all going on with money, but we lived rich, poor, rich, poor. Every time they bought a new sports car or a private airplane, my parents were literally down to their last $5. So growing up, it felt like being strapped into a seesaw while riding a roller coaster, a financial roller coaster growing up. That insecurity around living what I call a life of a poverty of prosperity. And what I mean by that is really hardworking, very high income earning parents who really had nothing to show for it in terms of creating any wealth that was going to create a sustainable lifestyle in the future, right? They had all these toys to show for it. But it's really not fun to drive in a brand new Corvette when you can't afford groceries or health insurance. So I got a lot of lessons just by observing my parents. And I was always the kid, like, looking at my parents and thinking, man, you guys have all the ingredients to go from ho-hum to hot damn, right? They were smart. They were hardworking. They're good people, good sense of humor, great values. And they just self-sabotaged when it came to money. And I remember watching my parents and thinking to myself, man, if you guys could just get out of your own way, right? If you could just get out of your own way. But I was an unskilled, powerless kid, right, who desperately would have helped her parents if she had the skills and the ability to do it. And that's actually what drove me to become a financial advisor, is satisfying that little 10-year-old inside of me, right, who wasn't able to help her parents. I'm able to do that in my wealth management practice. But the big capstone life lesson of a course that I learned was when I was 17, after being told that despite all the financial ups and downs, we'll send you to college. My mother was tickled pink. I'd be the first in the family to go to college. My father took me on college campus tours, and that time with him was like epic. And I stood on the dock of a marina with my father's brand new yacht in the water, and he informed me, we don't have the money to send you to college. Just like that. Shrug of the shoulders. Oops. Yeah. So I literally stood on that dock shocked beyond belief. And I didn't respond. I often think about it now, many years later. I really don't know how I controlled myself and didn't push my father into the water when I learned that. But I didn't. I guess it was a shock.
We might be talking to a much different version of Michelle if that was the case.
Yes. But when I stood there on that dock, my mind just immediately went to, okay, college costs a lot of money. I don't have any money. How am I going to get money? Okay, I got to get a job. Like, my wheels just started turning on how I was going to actually accomplish that, because getting an education for me was non-negotiable, right? And I use that word education, not specifically college. And I know, you know, our education system is changing a lot. I grew up in the 80s, and college was like the thing. I think that's really changing for our clients about what they foresee and what they want to provide for their children, because I think we're heading into a time where it's going to be much, much more flexible on an educational basis of how we prepare for our life's work. But I'm taking a little bit of a sidebar. So I just got busy. What I landed in was a job that had tuition reimbursement benefits. And I inquired a little bit more about that. Basically, I worked full time, and corporate America paid for about 80% of my college degree just by using the college tuition reimbursement benefit. So turning this into clients, though, I never told this story to clients. I never told the story to anyone until I was ready to. And when I did, two things happened. One, I didn't realize I'm very growth mindset, which growth mindset is like part of growth mindset is recovering from post-traumatic growth or recovering from trauma. And you can have very, you know, post-traumatic growth kind of a mindset, which I do. So that's what propelled me forward. But what I never realized was that I had actually never grieved that loss. I never grieved the loss of that incident. Really kept my relationship with my parents very stuck in time. It limited me as a person where I was hiding a major event that had happened in my life. So people never really fully got to know me. And when I first publicly spoke about this, it literally broke me down and then broke me wide open. And I stepped into conversations with clients. I started telling them, and most of them would say, it makes total sense why you do what you do. Now we understand you more. And I actually always make a point when I'm talking with a prospective client to share my story in the condensed version. But the gist of why I share it is the old adage, right? No one cares what you know until they know how much you care. Well, what I always say to clients is one of our biggest fears is either not having enough or running out of money. And I actually lived that growing up, and I'll go into a couple of my stories. What I always want people to know is why I do what I do. And my mission when I work with wealth management clients is for them to be set for life, however they determine that, however they define it. Because going broke or not having enough, one of our biggest fears, is worse than we imagine. And I know that because I lived it. And I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. And that's why I do what I do. So my mission is to help you get set for life, however you define that.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much in that. What I kind of think about is what we talked about briefly in the digital green room before we came on is, you know, this notion of, I think the social construct is such now that financial professionals, and I don't even know, I don't know that we necessarily do this on our own, but the industry portrays us as, you know, perfect. You know, we have the answers to how to build a budget and invest your money and retire when you want to and yada, yada, yada. And often the way that we got to where we are is because of some type of money trauma in our past. And I'm so glad that you shared how owning that allowed you to kind of pivot and even probably embrace what you do a little bit better. And I don't know, it sounds like it might be your superpower from reading from your bio. Maybe you can unpack that a little bit more.
That's a nice way to say it. Thank you. Well, the first time I shared it with a potential client, her reaction was literally, "Where have you been all my life?" And I think what it does is our stories, they make us relatable to other people. I mean, I know like sports cars and private airplanes and yachts are not exactly relatable, right? But when you break it down to the insecurity that it created, everybody can start to relate to that a little bit. We've all felt that. And, you know, and it's having a mission to help other people avoid those feelings and avoid that financial outcome. But yeah, you know, I think we are looked at as experts and we should have all of the answers when we're just human beings like everybody else and we have our own insecurities. I actually have an approach, Dominique, that I very much believe that our role as advisors is really to hold space for our clients, because a big part of what we do is actually to help them access the inspiration and the motivation that is within them. Now, I'm not talking about specific investment recommendations we might make, right? Or technical expertise in retirement plans or taxes or state, you know, quarterbacking. But what I'm talking about is more the social emotional component that our job, I think, is to hold space. And it's very interesting because there's a research report out by a group called Nonprofit. And one of the stats hit me between the eyes when I read it, which is 64% of clients with a financial advisor do not feel like they have anyone to talk with about their money. What?
I can hear that. I can see that. I can see that. I mean, it reminds me of, I was just rereading one of George Kinder's books about life planning. I think it's called Life Planning for You. And he speaks to what you're talking about now. When clients, I think this is going to sound really condescending to the person that doesn't know me, but it's almost like clients don't understand what they even want. I think it's our job to help them articulate sometimes what they want, because there's a facade and there's a veneer that the industry has painted about what financial advice is supposed to look like, what that relationship is supposed to look like. And I remember having a conversation with a recent client that I brought on, and I was just, you know, the whole conversation, you know, the first 30 minutes or so that we talked, it was 80% her. And she was just like, this is kind of different. Like, it's like, so are you going to talk? I'm like, I want to know about you. And then we got to the point where I was like, okay, so this is all the stuff that you want. This is what we so didn't talk about numbers. We talked about where she wants to travel, what she wants to do with her inherited mom's property, and why she wants to do that, and all this different stuff. And I think there was such a, I could see it. Because I've been doing this a while now. You can see when something lifts off clients because they do have that outlet. And I wonder if you can kind of weave that thought with what you were saying before, because I think there's so much power in breakthrough for clients when we share our story, show that we're human, and then we start to ask them what they really want to do and marry those things together. Do you have anything mm-hmm. for us on that?
I do. And I love your approach. It sounds similar to my approach. You know, money is, I almost say to people, like, money is actually like the last thing we're going to talk about. And I was referred to a client once, and when I talked to her, she said, yeah, the couple of people I've been talking to, all they want to do is talk about my money, and I want to talk about me. And we forget, like, people want to actually talk about what's going on. So if you give them that space, they'll do it. My favorite question to ask is, what does wealth mean to you, to the client? And you just let that breathe. And what you're going to end up with is what the client values, who's important in their life and who they value, what their priorities are, what their time frames are. And you're almost going to get on the surface kind of the universal answer to that question, which is something like this. I want to be able to do what I want, when I want, how I want, with who I want, without ever worrying about money again. And I also talk to them about, you know, what's the difference between worrying and thinking? Because we have to think about our money, but worrying about your money is a choice, right? I mean, it's an emotional response too, but we can control that. So to me, it's really all about approach. And my perspective has always been, I want to become an expert in my client. I want to understand their financials as well as their psyche around money as well as they do. And oftentimes, we might be the first person that they've ever opened up and talked about money about. Because we just don't have those types of conversations. We haven't actually been taught how to have them. So to me, it's all about approach and getting at all of those, you know, core values of the client and aspirations. And I think, Dominic, you said something really important, which is clients don't necessarily know what they want. And I think there's two sides to that. I think it's because none of us stop long enough, often enough, to really sit down and look at our lives, right? Because that's really what we're asking our clients to do, is let's look at your life, right? Because money's an inanimate object, but it animates most of your life. Let's take a look at this, right? That's the relationship part. And it gives them that opportunity to reground themselves in where they've been, where they are, where they're going, right? And to even reminisce, like some of the questions I like to ask are, what are the three greatest lessons that you've learned, and who did you learn them from? and tell me about, you know, when you look back, what are the things that you think you've done really, really well? What are the things that you know you're challenged at? What are the things you're afraid of, mistakes that you're going to repeat again, right? The last time I asked that question, the gentleman said, you know what, I know I've been way too conservative in my life. And he's only in his mid-40s. So he's got time, if he wants to ratchet that up, that it would really make a difference, right? But if I hadn't asked him that question, I'm not sure that would have popped out anywhere, you know?
With all the distractions and things vying for your attention on a day-to-day basis, when do you have time to consider what your purpose is? Have you thought about what it is going to take to achieve your goals? After having dozens of conversations with clients, I decided to provide a simple framework on how you can answer those questions. That framework is contained in my book called Assess, Address, and Adjust, a practical guide to becoming unstuck and achieving your goals. Look, if you've ever felt that you're losing the time for money trade and want to start winning in the next 30 days with real practical tips to improve your situation, or if you're not motivated to push through the day because you have a job you don't enjoy, a relationship you're ready to get out of, or just feel like you're not where you want to be in life, this book is for you, my friend. If you're ready to change that uncomfortable level of dissatisfaction that's currently going on in your life, and you want the tools to help you get unstuck, then head on over to domhendersonsr.com/the-unstuck-book. And for a limited time only, you can get a signed copy by yours truly. Now let's get back to the conversation.
You're bringing up so much good stuff. I have so many juicy rabbit trails to hop down. So thank you so much for this. This is like a podcast host dream. Awesome. What I would say is, I think it's interesting. There's an interesting notion around this because you're bringing up things that, to be quite honest, you would probably be better served to learn these in, let's say, a psych class or sociology class or the School of Hard Knocks, right? You can just definitely do that in, you know, in relationships in life if you try hard enough. Juxtaposed to what, you know, the Series 65 or the FINRA exams or the CFP exam, for all the good that those exams do, they don't teach very much of what we're talking about right now, which is the reason why I have to keep doing this platform, because I talk to career changers and aspiring financial professionals and even existing financial professionals, and they're so wrapped around the axle around, you know, passing the test and what I need to learn for this, and I got to be a CFP dad, and I'm just like, oh my gosh, you know, this is not even what clients want. They don't even care about your knowledge, your financial knowledge. And I just wondered if you can kind of underscore that, because there's a generation that is listening to this and will listen to this, and I don't want them to get confused on the priority of financial knowledge. Yes, you need to have competence. You totally need to know what you're doing. But at the other end of the spectrum, there's the emotional intelligence, there's the empathy, there's the communication, there's the, you know, all those other skills that come with this career. And I wonder if you could speak to that a little bit.
Yeah. Great questions. Thank you for asking. You know what? I see it as a triangle. I think that our business has been evolving. And I do think the foundation is, you know, designations, technical knowledge, all of your licenses, your training programs that you're going to go through, right? That's all. But in the client's mind, all of that is a given, that you have the technical knowledge and the competence, right? What you want to do is cross over in a bedside manner. So the triangle I see is technical competence, coaching, and financial therapy. That's the trifecta, I think, of a great financial.
So, you know, you're going to have to dig into that, because that's all up my alley. I love it.
Okay. So listen, the coaching as opposed to therapy, if you think about this for a second, coaching is really, okay, sure, we might take a little trip down memory lane so that I can get to overstand you, right? Overstanding is when I understand your point of view and I know where it came from. Right? Your point of view may not make sense to me, but that doesn't matter. What matters is that I understand how your point of view makes sense to you. Like, to me, that's the goal of what we're trying to do, right? Because I am the least judgmental in my life when it comes to my wealth management practice. I don't know exactly why that is, but I am able to totally unhook there. And maybe it's because I view what I do as I'm on my client's agenda. What they're trying to accomplish is what I'm trying to accomplish. And I don't have any judgment around that whatsoever, right? So you've got to suspend the judgment about things that clients want to experience and do in their life, and even what they already have experienced and the things that they reveal, right? It's just information, right? But coaching is intriguing to me in that it's very current and future focused, right? If you're doing it, I think, the way most coaches will, which is really getting into what is the problem or problems that are being presented, and how can I guide and support and coach you through that? And if you think about, you know, if we are the second long-term relationship till death do you part, hopefully, with our clients, right? I don't know about you, but I want to work with clients like for life. Like, this is not a transaction. So I want to be focused on getting to know my client, because part of the insight that I'm going to understand is how to work best with them, the type of coaching and support they need when they face different challenges, when they're not being as resilient as they need to be, right? Or their life changes. I'm going to understand a little bit about how to guide them through that, not only for the next week, but probably for the next 20 or 30 or 50 years, right? If you think about what we do for a living, none of what we help people do is an overnight success. So I think we have to have these skills where we're shoulder to shoulder with the client. And if they're forgetting what their goals are, and if they're forgetting temporarily who they are, we're remembering. And we keep centering them back to that. So to me, like, that's the coaching. The therapy is, there's, you know, technical skills to be learned there, right? There, I do have a financial therapy certificate from Kansas State University. It's a deep dive into money and relationships, money scripts, behavioral economics, you know, all the really interesting, juicy, good stuff to know. The challenge is applying it, right? So there's no, you know, there's no manual for here's how you take all this technical knowledge and how you actually apply it with clients. And I'm a big believer. I've met financial advisors, and we'll talk about behavioral economics, and they might identify, okay, well, my client's really, you know, he's using an availability bias or recency bias or confirmation bias. And they'll actually say to the client, well, I see, you know, you're really using a confirmation bias. In a million years, that would never come out of my mouth. Like,
how did they know that stuff?
I don't care. I just want to be smart enough to know, to be able to identify, or at least take a really educated guess at what I think is going on for the client.
Yeah.
And then keep my mouth closed and then just work on the coaching technique to help move them through it.
Right? Yeah.
So that's, yeah. I mean, that's my MO about using it. But I think it's, you know, if we talk about financial literacy for a second, I think we need an expanded definition of it. And what I feel is missing is the social emotional component, right? If you look at any learning standards across this country, what you're going to find is mainly the technical skills that they're trying to impart to our, you know, K through 12 graders. And the social emotional piece is missing. Just a little sidebar. I live in New Jersey. Believe it or not, I approached the state with this crazy idea. They were in the middle of amending all their standards in every subject. And I approached them about, have you ever thought about adding financial psychology and behavioral economics to the standards? They hadn't. They loved the idea. I got invited on a committee. Fast forward, New Jersey just became the first state to include financial psychology and behavioral economics for our K through 12 graders beginning last September, 2021. Because, you know, I don't know about you, Dominique, part of my motivation, I have two kids in the public school system. I live in New Jersey, and I've also met people who 55 years old, making $1.1 million a year with their stock options, and they have $55,000 saved toward retirement, and believe that they'll be able to support their lifestyle when they want to retire in the next 7 years. That tells me, okay, this person knows how to earn an income, right? They're actually killing it in their career, he's a little bit like my parents were, right? High performance defiant, right? He's sabotaging this. Why? He actually didn't need me. He needed a financial therapist, right? I wasn't actually able to help him. He needed to go to another professional. And that's kind of another thing too, is that with our empathetic coaching type of, or with an empathetic coaching type of approach, my rule of thumb is, if I keep seeing the same behavior despite my best efforts to guide and coach this client, then it might be time to enroll another financial, or to enroll a therapeutic, a mental health practitioner into the relationship. I've done that several times. It was initially really uncomfortable to bring that up to a client. I've gotten used to it because, I mean, it's a hell of a thing for a financial advisor to say, I think we need a mental health professional here. But there comes a time. I mean, we're trying to serve clients and help them to do what's in their best interest because, and I'm going to go off another tangent.
Well, let me say this real quick, because you bring up something that I think is not talked about enough. Of course, mental health is not talked about enough. Maybe it's getting its day in the sun right now. But what I would say is, well, I have this saying. You can't give away what you don't have. So, you know, a lot of financial professionals get into this career, going back to the top of our conversation about, you know, embracing their story and, you know, really owning that. You won't be able to walk a client through the steps that they need, even if that means bringing in someone else that has a different level of skills or expertise than you, if you haven't done the work on your own. And so I think there needs to be more collaboration because, like you said, it is in the client's best interest. We're trying to help them win. And sometimes we have to help them get out of their own way.
Yeah.
And there can't be any ego on our side when that comes to pass. I think, you know, if you find yourself feeling like, well, I don't want to, you know, bring in this professional because, you know, maybe it's, you know, I don't know, competition or whatever you're thinking. I think that's just a, you know, that's a scarcity mindset to probably just get rid of so that you can help more people. Because when you find yourself being valuable and helping more people, you'll probably have everything you need is kind of my take on that.
I completely agree. Completely agree.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I completely agree. And I, you know, when I think about, when I hear financial advisors, if I ask, you know, why did you get in this business? Most will say, because I want to help people and make money. And that's great. But they're not answering the question, why? Why? Right? I think it's really important to know your why. You want to know your client's why, right? Why are you asking, what does wealth mean to you? Because you want to really understand what motivates them. Why? Because when you pour some emotional fuel on the situation, the client is going to stick to their plan and their strategy a whole lot more if they're grounded in their emotion. And then if you have the benefit of understanding what's behind all of that, it helps you to help them keep on track. And yeah, I totally agree with about the financial scarcity mindset. There totally is enough to go around, but I don't think you get there until you get there, right? You have to be in that place where you feel abundant and that what you're up to in the world is you're doing the best work of your life with all of the right people. And when you're at that stage, then you're like, you know what? My relationships are rock solid. I don't care who's knocking on the door. My clients are going to say, I'm good. I'm covered. Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Right. So
I know it's probably difficult for, I talk to a lot of new entrants or aspiring entrants into the industry, and they're like, man, you know, Dominique, Michelle, you know, it's going to take so long for me to get there. You know, what I would implore, be curious is to your advice too, as we get ready to bring this in for a landing, I would implore them to get around someone. And, you know, we talked in the digital green room before this, but I did not prompt you to talk about your why. And everybody that knows me knows I always start with why. Whenever I'm working with people, coaching, whatever, I always start there. And it's good to know your why because it'll lead you to a who, which then leads you to your how. I think people try to, you know, move those around. And that's not the order it needs to be. Know your why first. Even if you're leaving some other industry to get into this industry,
which is a great one. You have to be motivated by the right thing, because there's so many things that can keep you from doing your best work and showing up your best for clients, that you don't want to let the those things get in the way. What do you have any other kind of tidbits or strategies, advice?
Yeah, I just want to comment. I mean, I think we have to remember too. You know, what we all do as financial advisors, this job ain't for sissies. We ask the hardest question in the world. Hi, would you like to give me all your money? Like, that's, I don't care what anybody says. That's the hardest, hardest question you're ever, anyone is ever going to be challenged in a job and try to make a living doing that, right? This is a tough field in terms of finding enough people to say yes to that question, right? So yeah, I'm totally with you. Totally with you.
Yeah. So I would be remiss to not ask you about the success formula guy, because I think is this more of a who uses this and how can people get a hold to it is probably the question. Yeah.
So let me ask the who, and then I'll say the what, and then how people can find it. So who's using it is our clients and financial advisors. I've seen it both. What the success formula guide is, it goes back to what I talked about really early on, is in actually thinking about my parents and their inconsistency in this one area of life. That expression, how you do one thing is how you do everything, I think is a complete myth. There's something called self-sabotage. We all do it. I call it high-performance defiance, which is when you know better and you refuse to do better, which is a little bit of my dad. But anyway, I got really interested in exploring this. And basically, what the Success Formula Guide is, it asks people to take a look at, you know, 3 to 5 of their successes in life from any area of their life. And I walk them through a lot of solutions focused, positive psychology type of approach, where you're looking at your strengths, not your weaknesses. So thinking back on a success, what is the human capital that you use to go from point A to point B? Because it wasn't just what you had in resources. It was who you knew. It was what you knew. And it was who you were being. Who were you when you started? Who were you when you finished, right? Because reaching goals changes us, right? It makes us who we become. It's looking at hope and confidence and resiliency and optimism, right? It's looking at those things in the context of different goals that we've achieved in our life. So why do we do that? When you're done doing this type of an exercise, you end up with a 30,000 foot view of, okay, this is how I do me. This is how I do my success. And you can start to see some common threads. Those common threads in the context of a client using this can all be mapped over onto money. Because if you've been successful in one area of your life, you can be successful in this area too. You absolutely can. And I don't know that we always have to go outside of ourselves. I do think it's great to have mentors and role models and people to go to for information and people that are doing something that we wish that we were doing and go learn from them. But for example, if you know, you mentioned why, and I'm a big Simon Sinek fan myself. So when Simon was writing his one of his books, he used to take a fake airplane ride to and from New York to Florida, and he would write. He would write from New York to Florida, get off the plane, get back on that same plane, and ride it back to New York. He found that uninterrupted time on an airplane was how he could write. So he thought, okay, now I'm going to write my next book. When he wrote his next book, he decided not to do the airplane thing. He literally hired someone to come over and babysit him to make sure that he was writing when he said he was going to write. Okay. If you met Simon Sinek and he said, oh, all you got to do to be a success is, you know, take airplane rides to write your book, I mean, would you do it? So that's like what those are the risks that we take when we listen to how other people have done their success. We may be able to pull some threads out, but usually it's such a unique combination of things that go into making us successful that it's really hard to emulate what somebody else does. And if you're if you're listening to this podcast, you've been a successful person, right? In many areas of your life, just stop and take a look at them. The best way to find it is on my website, which is michelleab.com. It's Michelle with two L's, ab.com. It's right there on the homepage.
Cool. Yeah, we definitely have to check that out, and we'll link it in the bio, in the show notes when we air this. Well, this has been great, and as you know, this is a podcast to help empower tomorrow's financial professionals with tools to serve their client at the next level. And I just wonder, Michelle, with that in mind, what word or words of wisdom would you want to leave with our audience?
You know, my favorite piece of wisdom I ever got was from my mom. And she used to say to me all the time, it's what's inside that counts. And it was, of course, referring to people, right? It's below the surface that really matters. And I would say the same thing. It's what's inside that counts. It's our job to figure out what's inside of the clients that we're working with.
That's great. Man, one for the ages. I could actually probably go on for another hour, but I'm going to respect your time. I think there's a lot beneath the, we kind of just touched the tip of the iceberg with this topic of debunking money secrets. And there's so much to uncover for the next generation and existing financial professionals that I think are looking to take their client relationships to the next level. So thank you so much for the deposit into the audience, and wishing nothing but the best.
Thank you. It was great being with you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
I really hope you enjoy this conversation. Before we go, just a few things. The best way to retain what you just learned is to do more than just listen. You first might want to write down your most important takeaway and then give yourself a deadline to apply it. For bonus points, you might also let someone hold you accountable to that deadline. And remember, the only way more people will know about this podcast is if you share it. You can do that by sharing a link to this episode on your social media or by leaving a review on iTunes so that it reaches a wider audience. I'd appreciate if you took the time to do either or both. And finally, if you'd like to learn more about how Jumpstart can help you become a next generation financial professional or partner with you in finding next generation talent for your organization, send us an email at hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com, just in case you needed to get a pen to write that down. That's hello@jumpstartcoachinglab.com. Bye for now, until our next conversation.